Welcome everyone to the Blind Entrepreneur Podcast, where we help entrepreneurs and business professionals execute their vision by guiding them to profitability.
Let's go.
You're listening to episode 195, and today we have Liz Pifko. Liz is the owner of Corvinus Law, a business and IP law firm focused on helping startups, small businesses, and online entrepreneurs with their legal needs in the areas of intellectual property, which is trademarks and copyright, general corporate matters, contract drafting and negotiation, entity formation, which is so important and a lot of people aren't talking about it and they probably should. And the last thing is internet law. So website, legal documents, everything else in between. Liz, welcome to the show. How is your day going?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So before we get into the heavy hitting questions about business, entrepreneurship, life, everything in between, we have to talk about food. And I believe you mentioned you're from Hungary, right?
Yes.
From Hungary. So, and you're in New Orleans now, so you probably have a very eclectic approach to food. So the question is, imagine you just had the absolute best day of your life. Where are you going to eat and what are you going to order to make your day complete?
Oh, man. You know, because I'm from Hungary and I live in New Orleans, I just have a million options running through my head. But if I had the best day ever, I would probably go to Café Du Monde and order a lot of beignets because that is my guilty pleasure and I don't let myself have it unless I really did just have the best day of my life.
There you go.
So load up on beignets.
Are you going, coffee too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Coffee and chicory.
There you go.
Best.
That's the way to live, right? So the first real question of the podcast is, tell me about a time that you felt lost or blind in business and how did you overcome those obstacles?
So, well, there have been a couple times, but right around the time that I started my practice and really started putting myself out there, everything was going great. You know, I was making money in month one, but I put too much on my plate and I started to burn myself out. And it got to the point where, you know, just my body was just screaming at me and I was feeling like crap all the time because I just didn't know how to have that work-life balance where I'm doing what I'm supposed to do and also at the same time, you know, paying attention to self-care. So I'm sorry, my video just skipped, so I don't know if you guys can hear me all right.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good. So yeah, I didn't know how to pay attention to self-care. And of course, I started to burn out. I started to have all these problems. And I really needed to just get with someone to help me figure out, you know, how I can have that work-life balance. Part of the burning out was that I was taking on all kinds of clients that weren't really an ideal fit for me. And sometimes, you know, when you're just starting out, you take on whatever work you can because you believe that you have to. You don't know that you can find just as many perfect clients as imperfect ones or ones that just simply don't jive with you. If you focus on the right type of marketing or the right type of people, you know, you're being more yourself in business, you're going to start attracting the right people. So I had to make a couple mindset shifts around that. And really, you know, when I was putting myself out there, just being just me, nothing else. And firing problematic clients, you know, clients that gave me 20% of my revenue and 80% of my problems had to go. And that was a hard decision. But I did it and it proved to be very beneficial because I immediately attracted perfect clients in their place. But that fear of, you know, letting go of a significant chunk of my paycheck was definitely holding me back for a long time and making me sick.
Yeah. And I can imagine, I mean, something in particular that you focus on is the startup world, the small business world, and online entrepreneurs. A lot of people would say that the startup worlds are they're broke. They don't have any money. They can't afford things like law because they're focusing more on growth and et cetera, et cetera. Why do you think for your business that the startups and the small businesses are the perfect fit for what you do?
It's simply a personal preference. They're the type of companies that I think are going to change the world and drive progress in a direction that I personally agree with. So I was a litigator for almost 10 years, and I worked with large corporations, you know, large multinational conglomerates. And, you know, I wasn't aligned with what they were doing and just the how bureaucratic they were, you know, and the general idea. I'm not going to get into anything too deep on this topic because it does veer off into politics and I don't want to touch that. But I do enjoy working with startups that are being that are building new and innovative ways to solve problems and are going to become eventually world-changing companies. Absolutely. And even if you just change the lives of 100 people for the better, you've left the world a better place than it was when you came into it. So I do consider that, you know, a positive thing.
Absolutely.
So that's why I work with startups.
And that's a great answer. And I think some of the things that a lot of startups miss is the aspect of, or maybe they just neglect the intellectual property piece. They neglect the law piece entirely. I guess, why do you think that they neglect that? And then the second thing, would the follow-up to that would be, what are some of the common things that startups and small businesses are missing in their business today?
So I think a lot of startups are neglecting the legal side of their businesses altogether. Like, they just don't want to touch it because they are either completely terrified of it, and they think ignoring it is going to make it go away, or they don't like working with attorneys, or they think that it's going to be prohibitively expensive to speak to an attorney and get set up correctly. So, you know, expense, fear, general dislike of the industry, I think all combine into this really terrible thing of pretending like your business doesn't have a legal side, and then, you know, making mistakes that easily could have been avoided early on that are eventually going to cost you your business and sometimes even your personal assets. And I think it's fear.
So when it comes to fear, which a lot of people are in fact fearful of that extra spending, because when they hear the word lawyer, they think of a lot of dollars, they think of a lot of cents. What are some of the key things that startups in particular are missing in their day-to-day beyond just being set up properly? Because I think that is incredibly important, but just what are some of the things that we're missing?
So, as you mentioned, set up properly, I have to mention that, because if you don't have an entity that affords you liability protection, you're doing it wrong from the start. Also, as a startup, you need to have your contracts straight. And when I say that, I mean you need to have contracts that say that reflect what you do in your business. They reflect your policies, your procedures, you know, what you do in terms of refunds and returns, what your scope of work is. So it's a very custom document that defines the relationship between you and your clients, or you and your customers, you and your business partners, you and your vendors and suppliers. Each one of those relationships need to have, you know, some fairly detailed contracts that say what that relationship is about. So you can't just download one from the internet, you know, put your signature on it and think that you're protected. That's often worse than just not having anything at all.
So I want to ask you a quick question about that. So I download the, when we first started our business, we downloaded something online. And we used it, and it worked well for us for maybe the first couple years of business. And then we became smart and invested some dollars and cents into the aspect of like a legal, like a real legal team. So do you have any scenarios or examples of when somebody took something online that wasn't specific to their business and then got into serious legal issues because of that particular document that was created?
Oh, yeah, I have horror stories upon horror stories to tell about that. So it can be something as minor as, you know, the return and refund policy in the contract is different from the return and refund policy that you contemplated. Mm-hmm. But since it's in the contract, now the law between you and whoever you're working with is what's written in the contract. So if it says, you know, will give you a 100% refund on anything that you may be dissatisfied with within the next 6 months, and you signed your name to that thing, now that's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And that can be a fairly minor thing. Or if it's, you know, you've rendered $15,000 worth of services, but someone says, oh, hey, I'm dissatisfied, give me my money back, that can be a problem. There are bigger issues when it comes to indemnities and liability limitation and things like that. Clauses that concern risk allocation between the parties and what kind of financial losses the parties might be responsible for. You might have downloaded a contract from the internet that says you will be responsible for 100% of the financial risk associated with this project. Now, if that risk is in the six or seven figures, you know, you might not want your name to be on a contract like that. Might not want your business to be obligated to essentially serve as the insurance company of the other party. Yeah. But if you don't understand these things and you've just downloaded something off the internet and you signed it, you know, chances are you do have something like that. And, you know, people think that their contracts are working because they haven't gotten sued in 2 years, but that doesn't mean the contract is actually working for you. It just means you haven't been sued yet.
Yeah.
Like, you'll find out if the contract is working once you get sued.
Yep.
You know, so it's kind of a false sense of security. And that's why sometimes it's even worse to have a document than to not have one. Mm-hmm. Because it does lure you into that security feeling, and it's not accurate.
Yeah. And I think it's a really important thing that you mentioned is you don't know until you get sued, and tightening up those corners before that ever happens. Because let's be honest, you're in business, and if you grow to a certain number or a certain level, there is a strong possibility that legal troubles will happen. It's just, it sucks. I hate to say it, but it's going to happen. Something in particular that I'd like you to speak about is the trademark and copyright aspect to your business. A lot of people believe that as soon as I have a really good name for a business, for example, I should immediately trademark it, or I should immediately copyright a particular phrase. When do you think is a good time to think about intellectual property?
I think once you start becoming serious about your business, and once you feel like you know that this is the name you want to go with, and these are the products and services you want associated with that name, like once you start investing time and money to build goodwill in a certain name, because that's what customers are going to recognize you by, that's when you need to start thinking about trademarking. Really, you need to research the trademark for any name that you think about using before you start selling products and services under the name, because you don't want to be infringing on someone else's intellectual property. Mm-hmm. And get sued for a trademark infringement, because, you know, you're either using a name that's already taken or a name that's substantially similar to a name that's already taken.
Yeah.
That is being used by someone else in the same industry.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to spend your profits on paying damages to this other company because your name was too similar.
Yep.
So research first. Research should come pretty close to when you start doing business. But as far as trademarking the name yourself, like, whenever you're ready to invest in it, you don't want to invest into something that you're not going to use ultimately.
Yeah.
But if you know you're going to be building this name up, definitely do that. Now, with copyrights, it depends on the business. There are lots of businesses that are very content heavy. And as you know, copyrights protects your creative, literary, artistic expressions. So everything from blog posts to photographs to designs to sculptures, any creative work. If it's original, it comes from you. So you didn't copy from someone else. And it has like a just the bare minimum of artistic merit. Now, I shouldn't use artistic, creative. It needs to be original and creative. Then, you know, you need to start about copywriting it because, you know, there are a lot of businesses out there that are, that have blogs, that have like these intricate marketing sequences. And we do copyright, you know, marketing materials because there are people stealing other people's copy all the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm sorry, my phone just went off. copyright your important campaigns, especially if that's like your bread and butter, just copyright it. Artists, even coaches and consultants, a lot of these coaches and consultants that have online businesses are very heavy on content. Course creators too. Like if you have a course out, copyright the course. And do so immediately. Do it as soon as you publish it, because the longer you wait, the less remedies you have when someone else infringes on your content.
Yeah.
So if you don't do it immediately, you know, you might lose your rights to statutory damages, which is, you know, it's available for copyrighted material if you register it with the U.S. Copyright Office soon enough after its publication. And that allows you to sue in federal court and recover anywhere between $750 to $150,000 per infringement. Mm. So, you know, that's why you want to do it timely. And that's why you want to do it at all. Because if you don't, you don't have that remedy.
Yeah.
So, you know, if your copyright is unregistered, that means that you might be able to sue for actual damages, like the money you lost and the money they made off of your work. But, you know, if that amounts to $5,000 and is going to cost you $10,000 to prove it because you can't rely on the statute that gives you, you know, a specific monetary amount, then it's not worth it.
So my question to that point is, what pricing, I mean, without giving like your pricing in particular, because I don't think that would be fair to the people listening, but are we thinking, when we're thinking about trademark and copyright infringement and contract drafting and website documents, are we talking about hundreds of dollars? Are we talking about thousands of dollars, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands? I mean, obviously it depends on the firm that you're working with, et cetera, but can you give us like some realistic ideas of like how much this could cost you when it comes to business, like dollars, ranges, maybe. I don't know if you can give that to us.
It's difficult because, first of all, every business is different, so mm-hmm. your needs will be different. But I can give you some ranges just so you have an idea, so you stop being scared, mm-hmm. Scared of the unknown, especially. So normally, a custom contract, you know, if it's just a regular like 10-page contract, it'll run you about $1,000 because you have to consult with the attorney, you have to send them your documentation, they have to type up the contract, they need to put a lot of thinking and little legal research into it. So it's about $1,000 per contract. If it's a really extensive contract with tons of schedules and exhibits, and you're just taking up a lot of the attorney's time, then it can go up to $2,000-$3,000, sure, even above that, depending on the complexity of the business. Especially, you know, with software development contracts and things like that, where yep. things get really complicated. Or if the contract centers around a patent, which patent law we didn't talk about. I don't do patents, but imagine, you know, a typical software patent is about $12,000 just to patent the thing. So obviously your contract is going to be more complex. Mm-hmm. So there is a range there. But just your typical, like, you know, if you're a small business, you just want your client contract drafted, or, you know, your supplier and vendor agreements, distribution agreements, things like that, think $1,000 per contract is a good ballpark estimate. Let's see, intellectual property registrations. So the trademark process consists of two steps. Number one, we have to do a comprehensive search of, you know, all registered and unregistered common law trademarks that are not just the same as yours, because you can Google that, or you can go to the USPTO website and do a search for exact matches, but also for trademarks that are substantially similar, enough to meet the legal standard for consumer confusion. So what the patent office will say when rejecting a mark is that this is too similar to this other mark in either sound or look or commercial connotation that we think consumers are going to be confused. So we need to get a third party who has an algorithm to search the entirety of the internet for marks that are similar.
Yep.
And Google won't do this. Nothing will do this. Like, we as attorneys have to hire other service providers who do just that and nothing
Interesting.
Else. And they give us, like, sometimes it's a 10-page report, sometimes it's a 150-page report just containing similar marks. And we have to go through that and just, you know, look for all the similar marks that the USPTO might reject and then write the client a report kind of setting out potential issues and then giving our recommendation, red light, green light, are you going to file it or, you know.
And that takes a lot of time because I could say we went through that process and it was an eye-opening experience for us in particular.
Yeah, so it does take a lot of time. It's usually in like the 750 range. That's like the industry average for a comprehensive legal opinion. And, you know, you get the report too with the conflicting marks so you can see what else is out there and how you might need to modify yours.
Is it safe to say that you could probably get done the entire setup, legal process of all of your contracts, or at least most of your contracts, the entity, the intellectual property, somewhere around the range of, say, $5,000.
Yeah,
I would say that's
standard.
Probably pretty fair to say. So the people that are listening, for you to invest $5,000 to be set up properly for the rest of your life, I think is a very easy amount of money. Although it might be difficult now, it's a certain amount of money that is going to protect you and help you for the future. Instead of you losing $5,000 now, you could lose hundreds and thousands of millions of dollars in the future. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think $5,000 is typically what I recommend that startups allocate just to legal. Like,
absolutely.
Just factor it into your startup costs and treat it as like a necessary expense, like you would with any other expense.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very important because this is the type of stuff that can, you know, wipe out your entire business. Like everything you've built for years, all the money and energy and your entire sanity is in this business. And, you know, you say it's your baby, but and when you lose it, you know, it can be devastating to
Absolutely.
A person.
Absolutely. I want to throw something out there that is kind of been a buzzword, so to speak, and it's the aspect of GDPR. Can you tell us a little bit about why that's important? Because it's been a topic of conversation for months now, especially with all the new legality stuff in the EU, in sending emails to people is even an issue. Could you just kind of speak to that briefly and why we should care about it?
Yeah, so the GDPR is a black hole of a topic that, you know, one can give an 8-hour presentation on.
I'm sure.
But
condense 8 hours into 5 minutes.
Awesome.
So just give us
the
bullet points, really.
So is the General Data Protection Regulation that came out in the EU, and it became effective on May 25th of this year. So if you haven't taken any steps to comply with GDPR, know that you're past the compliance deadline at this point. However, you know, there has been like kind of a mass hysteria effect online because some people were, you know, trying to hype it up, trying to make money off of it. And it's really not, I don't find it to be as big of a deal as people made it sound like. So the GDPR applies to any business that collects personal information on EU residents. And it requires that, first of all, you notify your users that you are collecting personal information. You have to tell them exactly what personal information is being collected, and you have to tell them how you're collecting it and how you're going to process it. So it's difficult for American businesses because they're not used to that level of, you know,
care
strictness yeah. in terms of, you know, data regulation, especially when you consider the fact that you have to give, the user has to give positive affirmative consent to the collection of the data and to the specific purposes that you use them for and how you're going to process it. So all of that, they need to give consent up front. Mm-hmm. And what's confusing Americans is usually, you know, how you have an email opt-in on mm-hmm. your site or on your landing page, like sign up for our email and you'll get our newsletter, or enter your email here and get this freebie. When you do that, you also have to get them to specifically consent to receiving marketing emails from you, or specifically consent to being on your weekly nutrition newsletter or whatever. It's not enough to say, we want your email address and you'll get this freebie. So you know, it also goes into freedom of consent. You know, consent has to be freely given, not as a condition of receiving something. So you have to kind of restructure your lead captures to where the freebie is actually free. And so they would, you know, they would give their email, get the freebie. And after that, you would have to have some really like bomb copy to make them say, yes, I also want to be on your newsletter because my newsletter has bonuses and my newsletter has reader specials only available to people who sign up. And my newsletter is so awesome. And you know, so you have to convince them after they have given their email address too.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's really, it's a very complicated regulation. And of course, violations, meaning you took an email address or some kind of personal information, and that can be tracking info, you know, browsing behavior, pixel info, all kinds of stuff. If you took that from an EU resident, then you are subject to some pretty heavy fines that can go up to 20 million euros or 4% of your global revenues, whichever is greater.
Yeah.
So that's where the fear mongering comes in. But at the same time, you know, this regulation, if they can go after Facebook, Yahoo, you know, all these bigger companies,
why
they're not
going to
go. Yeah, they're not going to go after, you know, Nancy's wreath shop. You know, it's just, you have to be realistic about it.
Sure.
So,
absolutely.
Yes, comply with the GDPR, because they can eventually come after you when they have an enforcement mechanism in place. But currently, like, we don't know how this is going to happen because it is an EU regulation. And while international governments do cooperate with one another, and chances are, you know, American authorities will cooperate with Brussels in handing over certain information and enforcing the regulation. But there is no concrete plan in place at this moment how that is going to happen. So it's not as serious at this point as people are trying to make it sound like.
And I think the people that are listening and even watching, what Liz is saying is so important. And I know in particular, I even quite a second guess myself in thinking, well, are we set up properly? Is the information that's on our website have the proper protocols that protects us? And if there is any doubt whatsoever, I highly recommend talking to a professional like you, you know, whether it's signing up for your services and becoming a client or reaching out to your trusted advisor so they can get you set up properly. Now, with all of that being said, I just have one final question for you. So the blind entrepreneur is defined as a person who may be temporarily lost or blind in business and they cannot see the obvious. To those particular people, what are three pieces of advice that you would give to a fellow entrepreneur?
So if, first of all, if you're blind, there is a reason for that. There is a reason you're not looking at something that is obviously there. And with the legal stuff, you know you need to look at it, but you're not. If you're resistant to addressing a particular aspect of your business, even though you know it's there, you know, there is an issue there. And that's usually, in my experience, an indicator that that's the very part that you need to look at right now. Because if it's stressing you out, it's important. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be stressed out over some crap that doesn't matter.
Very true.
So, you know, if you're afraid of the legal stuff, already deep down, you know that it's important. You know that you need to you need to handle it. If you have a fear of attorneys or you just don't like us, you know, there are many attorneys working with all kinds of different businesses. A lot of us, like me, we specialize in internet law, business law, intellectual property, things that are relevant to online businesses. Just find one that you're comfortable talking to and schedule a consultation. It's going to give you a peace of mind. It's going to give you clarity on what the issues are that you need to be aware of. And once you know, once you have like just a big picture overview of the very general stuff that you need to do, you won't be so overwhelmed anymore. Because at that point, you know, take notes during the consultation, have a page of notes, bullet point it all. You'll probably walk away with 13 bullet points, and then you can Google it and start researching. And you'll gain more and more clarity about the issues, and you'll either decide to DIY it, even though I don't recommend that necessarily, or you'll be more comfortable talking to an attorney because now you've researched it, you know what you need to talk about. Mm-hmm. So, and I guess another piece of advice I would give is, you know, to get your contracts in order as soon as possible. And that applies to, you know, both your person-to-person contracts, your client agreements, your vendors and suppliers, whoever you have a business relationship, and also your website contract. So, you know, you'll have some kind of terms and conditions, terms of use, terms of service on your website that tells your visitors what, you know, what you're selling, how they can use the information and whatever is being sold on the website. And it just kind of lays down the rules for the relationships, and you can put your disclaimers in that document, though we usually do disclaimers separately. Your terms and conditions can also have your disclaimers, which kind of says, you know, this is only information. It's here for informational purposes only. You are not my client. I am not giving you professional advice, medical advice, nutrition advice, whatever advice. You know, what you do with your information is up to you. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to be responsible for your abuse or misuse or whatever, because it does happen. Businesses do get sued. Once you're a business, you have a big target on your face. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just you just want to cover your butt. And then your privacy policy, which is required by law. So if you collect personal information from anyone, and this is US law we're talking about now, not the GDPR, it is required under FTC regulations and several state laws too, that you post a privacy policy on your website saying what you do with the information, what information you collect, and have opt-out provisions mm-hmm. too. And so, you know, you can get a huge FTC fine for not having it. Plus, you can get shut down by Facebook, Google, and other platforms where you might advertise, where they are known to, you know, actually go click on the ad, go to the landing page, click on privacy policy, and see what you've got there.
Yep.
So, and if it's not compliant, you know, Facebook ad accounts start getting shut down and you start getting banned from Google. And, you know, if that's a significant portion of your revenue, yeah, or it, there goes your business if you're like an ad agency or something where, you know, you're handling client accounts and the client's account just got shut down. I mean, good luck explaining that one.
Absolutely.
So get all these documents together. Just, you know that it's going to cost money. It's a fact of business. Get comfortable with that because you are in a business now. So just know that it's going to be money. Just rip that Band-Aid, get it taken care of, and sleep well for the rest of your life.
Amen to
Seriously.
That. Amen to that. That is great advice and greatly appreciate it. Liz, thank you so much for your time talking about your experience in business and life. I think you shined a great light on why people need to think about the legal aspect of the business. And again, I cannot stress it enough. You don't know that you're tightly buttoned up when it comes to your legal terms until a negative experience happens, and you should be thinking about it sooner rather than later. The next 30 seconds is all yours to promote whatever it is that you have going on. Tell people how they can learn more about you, how they could be a part of your journey, and potentially become a customer.
So you can find me either on my website, which is corvinuslaw.com, corvinuslaw.com, where you can either schedule a consultation with me. I offer three options. You know, there's a free 15-minute consult, a 30-minute, and an hour, which those two are obviously paid. You can learn more about my practice areas and what I do. You can also follow me on Facebook. It's Corvinus Law LLC. It's facebook.com/CorvinusLawLLC, where I also, you know, I post useful legal tips and pointers, and my website currently has a checklist that you can download just to help you get started with some general topics of like, these are the things you need to Google, you know.
Very cool.
So that should be helpful. That'll put you on my email list. And we are coming out with a DIY legal product/course/template library that includes all the major contracts that a small business or startup would need. Everything from, you know, formation documents to client agreements, independent contractor agreements, all kinds of intellectual property related contracts, you know, assignments, licenses, coexistence agreements, things like that. So we currently have 30 contracts that are going into the membership. We haven't officially launched yet, but it is happening in a couple of weeks. So when you download the checklist, it'll put you on our email list, and then you'll get info on that too. I don't want to get too much into, you know, the product at this point because we didn't launch yet.
Yeah, but when it's ready, please let us know, and we will add the link onto the show notes. And we will also put everything else on the show notes as well so people can contact you. Is there anything else you want to add?
I think we covered everything.
Very cool. Well, good stuff. Liz, thank you again for being on the show. And to those that are still watching, thank you guys for always liking, commenting, and subscribing. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube and head over to tbeshow.com for more interviews just like this one. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a good rest of your day.